people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and causing God to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight beside me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight inside of me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a part of dynasty. If you don't love it, leave it. But this song I'm singing, be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight inside of me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a far down key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fight inside of me, and that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and of course, all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, lots of news today. Let's see, where do we start? Well, I was at the special inquiry into Your War News, representing the Canadian Association for Free Expression today. Your War News is a feisty, opinionated, very politically incorrect satirical newspaper published in the East End of Toronto by Leroy St. Germain and edited most capably with a biting wit and fantastic cartooning by editor Dr. James Sears. Well, it has certainly twisted the tail, so to speak, of the politically correct. They have complained. They have taken up petitions. They have made complaints to Canada Post Corporation, which was delivering it. They have, filed a complaint with the Canadian Human Rights Commission. I'm not sure where that is going. Finally, the intimidated Postmistress General, well, actually, that's what they used to call her, but she's the Minister of Supply and Government Procurement, Judy Foote, on the 28th of May of last year, 2016, issued a interim prohibitory order, or an IPO, against Mr. St. Germain and Dr. Sears, and they are not allowed to send any mail, not just Your War News, any mail in Canada. Can't even send their mother or aunt or somebody else a birthday card or a Christmas card. That's right. Yeah, yes, and this is in Canada, incidentally, not in North Korea. So there is an option or open to a victim like this, and that is to seek a board of review, or I guess you'd call it an appeal, to decide whether the minister's order was reasonable. See, the minister under the law said that she had reasonable grounds to believe that your warden Hughes was committing a crime, particularly Section 319, that's Canada's notorious hate law, and Section 390, which is defamatory libel. What's the problem with all this? Well, let's start with the fact that when the minister made that order, your warden Hughes never been charged. Under the hate law, it still hasn't been. Or with defamatory libel, still hasn't been. So, how would there be reasonable grounds to believe they committed a crime? Well, there'd be no reasonable grounds at all. But even if they had been charged, we have this quaint notion in the Anglo-Saxon world that that you are, let me think, so many people have forgotten. Yeah, that's right, you're innocent until proven guilty. And you're not proven guilty until, well, there's been a charge, you're right? Not just an accusation by hysterical Jewish groups or homosexuals or the other, the usual politically correct crowd. No, you've got to be a charge. Then there's a trial, and that trial, you get to produce evidence, and the prosecution produces evidence, and you maybe have witnesses and argumentation, and only then, if there is a finding of guilt, do you suffer penalties. And that's the way it's supposed to be. Well, we're arguing, to make a long, complicated story, and with lawyers, everything's a long and complicated story, because actually they get paid by the hour. to make it short, we were arguing over the past day and a half as to, just what the committee should be looking into. We thought, at least complainant in this case, and that's, or the appellant in this case, it's Dr. Sears and Leroy St. Germain, that we were arguing the constitutional question, which comes in two ways. First of all, we argue that the law itself is unconstitutional. Why? Well, it allows the minister just basically wide open power. And the term reasonable grounds is very, very vague. secondly, it's open-ended. A prohibitory order can be permanent. In fact, this interim order has gone from the 26th of May to today, that's August the 11th, and continues on. They are not allowed to mail out your ward news. This is an outrage. Also, we argue it's unconstitutional because there is no means to control the minister's power. Yes, the minister can strike a board of review, and all the board of review can do is issue a recommendation, which the minister does not have to heed, incidentally. Furthermore, the minister is not under any obligation as to when that board of review is struck. Now, the victim has, I believe, 30 days to request a board of review. And after that, it's up to the minister. Well, it's up to the minister. She struck the board of review in February. So that was 9 months after interim prohibitory order was brought down against your ward news. Essentially, if it weren't for the resourcefulness of Dr. James Sears and the determination of his team, the paper would have been put out of business. And of course, it goes on. Now it's 15 months since the prohibitory order. So we argue that the law is itself an undue restriction on freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and denies natural justice. Furthermore, it's the actions of the minister are unconstitutional for exactly the same reasons. She has refused to give reasons for her belief on reasonable grounds in your ward news. has breached or is likely to commit a crime under Section 319, the hate law, or 390, the criminal libel. But her reasons are really just a pile of photocopies from your war news. That's not evidence. Those are passages, but those are not reasonable grounds to believe. One would have to provide argumentation and say, here, see what this passage says. Well, it looks as though it might be in violation of such and such a law. None of that has occurred. So essentially, those were our arguments. Today we got a further look into this system, and today was the opportunity for those people who support the government's position, in other words, the pro-censorship people. And these were three Jewish groups: the Friends of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, the League for Human Rights of B'nai B'rith, and the Canadian Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs, to weigh in. Each had half an hour. Now, the Friends of the Simon Wiesenthal Center went yesterday briefly. Their chief lawyer said he wouldn't be able to be here today, so he made remarks for about maybe 5 minutes or so. B'nai B'rith spoke for about 15 today, and there really wasn't an awful lot, but in my opinion, that they had to offer. And then came the real star lawyer for those opposing free speech, and that's a man by the name of Mark Fryman. Now, we've crossed swords with him in the past. He was a lawyer for one of the Jewish groups in the very long Zundel internet case, the Zundel site case that went from 1997 to 2002. He later became Deputy Attorney General of Ontario. He's now a senior professor at Osgoode Hall, and is, in legal terms, a pretty heavy hitter. And I think they brought him in because they really want to preserve this law, and he's clearly the one who knows law quite well. And the committee chairman, a woman by the name of Jamal, several times said how helpful his written submissions had been, and how Mr. Fryman, Fryman's comments were helpful, etc. Because I think he was trying to outline the law as it applies to inquiries, and whether they can consider this or that law, and the constitutionality of things, and so on. And ultimately, to make a long story short, that they can. So far, so good. And then he concluded, though, well, he took a swipe at me at Cafe, because we made our presentation yesterday, and he said that he wanted to refute something I had said. I had phrased things that some people found your ward news satirical stories objectionable. Well, it's a fact that some people do, and that's to be expected. Satire steps on the toes of the powerful usually, and they don't like it. Understandable, but in a free country, they should just have to grin and bear it. They're perfectly free in most cases. They often have organs of their own to reach the public. It's not as though they're poor, silenced little people. But anyway, he took great exception to that. He said that was that was a way of whitewashing hate. They're worried about the Jewish groups are worried about hate speech, he said. And I was downplaying that. I didn't see it that way, but let's see, what else did he say? Yes. He made this remark, and I'm not quite sure what it meant, but this is what he said. Mr. Farm said, it's as if he said, I've been driving this way for 30 years. Why have you pulled me over, officer? Well, the point I was making was your war news, since James Sears took over three years ago, has been publishing highly satirical articles, poking, making comments about the LGBTQ community, global warming, radical environmentalists, radical feminists, radical Zionists, the Holocaust, National Socialism, and so on. My point is not that they've been pulled over, that they should not be pulled over unless they've committed an offense. And he said, the impact of hate is to breed discrimination and sow seeds of fear in parts of the vulnerable population. What is objectionable is hatred. Well, maybe so, but is your war news hate? Even under Canada's very loosey-goosey laws. And the answer, clear answer is, well, it's never been charged, never been convicted. You can't say it's hate. You may feel it's hate, you may think it's hate, but it's not. Well, in her concluding, well, I'm sorry, about Freiman. Freiman was supposed to speak for half an hour. Ernst Sundahl always had in dealing with the justice system, he used to say, Riley, you know, there's one law for everybody else, and there's another law for Ernst. Well, I got the same feeling. All of us kept to our time limits. Us, we interveners, half an hour. The main parties, that's the lawyer for Dr. Sears and Leroy St. Germain. She had 2 hours. The government, the lawyer for the Attorney General for the government had 2 hours. Everybody kept to their respective time limits, but not Freiman. Freiman went on for an hour and 5 minutes. And finally, the chairman did say, well, you know, your remarks have been very, very helpful, but, you know, I think, more or less, we're saying you've got to bring this to a close. Well, we went on for another 5 minutes. And I thought, you know, it's typical of the arrogance and the pushiness of some people. The entitlement, you know, that he, just because he is a senior lawyer, that he gets to simply to ignore the rule, the constraints of everybody else. Nor did he really ask for extra time. He just appropriated. As Ernst always said, there's one law for the rest of us and another law for Ernst. He meant that in a negative way. In this case, there's one law for us and special privileged people get extra time. Okay. Well, then the lawyer for Dr. Pierce, I mean Dr. Sears, wrong guy here, Dr. Sears and Leroy St. Germain, then added a rebuttal. Oh, I'm sorry, before I finish with Freiman. Freiman then said, well, the Jewish community, he represents the Jewish community, which seems a little overbearing and arrogant that he represents a Jewish umbrella group, though not all Jews would agree with this. But anyway, okay, he represents the Jewish community, he said, and they wanted to be able, people wanted to be able to tell their stories. The people that would be named in your world news, and some of whom have intervener status, will want to be able to talk about their feelings, and the Jewish groups probably want to talk about hate and so on. Quite frankly, I think this will turn into, if the committee allows that, it's going to turn into a circus. They all, of course, parade Holocaust stories and their alleged suffering. I mean, Canada's wealthiest group economically wants to fold itself forth as a vulnerable minority. They're not vulnerable. They're a powerful minority, very powerful. And you know, the time has come, I think, and to talk facts. You're not vulnerable. Yeah, we wouldn't have these evil laws if it weren't for the organized Jewish lobby. Well, will they get it? Don't know. And that's what led to a very powerful summation by Samara Spector, and she's the lawyer for Dr. Sears and Leroy St. Germain, and she basically argued that the only recommendation is that the committee should go straight to looking at the way the law has been applied here. She said that there being no charges laid under Section 319 against your ward news. The minister has refused to identify which privileged groups are allegedly the victims of willful promotion of hate by your ward news. Well, that's pretty hard to do because there being no charges. But in the minister's opinion, well, she refuses to say. And apparently what the government lawyer, or the lawyer for the Attorney General, thinks that the committee ought to do is that it ought to go through the stack of photocopies of articles from your ward news, read them, and piece together reasons. Well, that's not fair. The minister claims she had reasonable grounds to believe your ward news was committing a crime, but she won't specify in what or how or in what way. Samara Spector, the lawyer for your ward news, pointed out that should the committee get into that and start reading through your ward news, they might come up with a different group from what the minister had in mind. That this is the procedurally, this is totally unfair. And she also commented on point made by both the lawyer for the Friends of the Simon Wiesenthal Center yesterday, a guy named Reiter, and Mark Fryman, and that's that these self-styled victims want to explain their stories, and she said their beliefs don't go to the reasonableness or probableness of the grounds. They didn't testify to the minister. So whatever they might or might not believe about how hard done they are by they are by comments in your world news, it's of no moment at all. And she said that the only recourse basically was for the committee to bring in a decision that the minister did not have reasonable grounds, and that the order should be rescinded. And it was quite a powerful presentation. Well, the committee, as often happens in these cases, did what they call they reserved. So they've gone off to decide how they're going to proceed, and I guess we'll be telling you more in the weeks to come. Okay, got a call tonight from Brad Love. Brad, of course, calls himself a citizen journalist, and he is, and he's the voice of the working man. Brad is a hard-nosed, hard-working guy. In fact, one of the reasons he's so in demand as an employee, despite his political activities, and is that he is the ultimate hard worker. He's the Protestant ethic on steroids. Well, Brad said that last night around 10 o'clock, six RCMP officers knocked at his door in Fort McMurray and put on the handcuffs and placed him under arrest. Why? Breach of probation. Brad tried to explain to them, but I've not breached my probation. My probationary period has passed as of about 2 months ago. You see, several years ago, he was placed on 3 years probation by a judge who had just sentenced him to 18 months in prison for writing non-violent letters, supposedly in violation of other probation conditions, to several Jewish groups in Toronto. Yeah, that's right. And that is, I must emphasize, in Canada, not in North Korea or Communist China. It's this sort of oppression of political dissent goes on right here in good old self-righteous smug Canada. So Brad was taken off to jail. This is about 10 o'clock last night. He got out finally today around 4 and walked home in a thunderstorm. He had to post a promissory bail of $2,000 to gain his freedom. He's charged with breach of probation. He tried to explain to the JP, the Justice of the Peace, whom he appeared before on television, or by television hookup, that the bail conditions had passed. That's right, he's no longer on bail. Oh, well, take that up with the court. And Brad Love is basically an ongoing target of the RCMP. It's outright political persecution and harassment. Well, what was it that Brad did supposedly violated his non-existent bail condition, parole conditions? Well, he made a call. A call? What? A bomb call? A bomb threat? No. He called Fort McMurray today. That's the newspaper up in Fort Bragg. And he said, "Why don't you guys investigate?" And this one quoted the way he gave it to me. What the cost was of the 2,190 medals that were given out to people for their role in the big fire Fort Mac had last year, last May of 2016. What's the cost? He said he'd already called City Hall, but they gave him the runaround. They couldn't or wouldn't tell him. And so he called the Fort Mac today and asked them what they could they find out. Because he said, look, everybody was getting one. He said first responders, firemen, even his bus driver, he said, it seems like almost anybody who stayed behind in Fort McMurray. He thinks it's completely frivolous. And, you know, that's his right. Other people would say, well, it was rewarding civic virtue. But, you know, reasonable people can disagree on these things. However, the paper, but not immediately, but sometime later, he called about a month ago, called the police and said, well, they felt afraid. Now, Brad didn't threaten anybody. Brad is a brash sort of guy, and that's just his character. He expressed an opinion. My gosh, as a Canadian, you're not allowed to have an opinion. He said he wanted to know what the cost was. That's a perfectly legitimate question, and it's a question that one would think maybe the newspaper might want to, if it's an investigative newspaper, it might want to inquire about. You know, it's not an unreasonable position. Anyway, because in the past, any time Brad communicates they call the cops. And, you know, that says a lot to me about the moral destitution of a lot of the Canadian media. So somebody calls you with an in-your-face question, and you call the cops because you're afraid. And these are intrepid journalists. This is disgusting. Anyway, so Brad said, furthermore, he said the police files are in such disarray. He said, you know, the bail by parole period is over. You know, I'm passed. I'm a free citizen again. Well, that's not what our papers say. Yeah, you'd think they might have checked. Then they say, well, Brad also called a radio station. Oh, well, he didn't. And they even had the state radio station wrong. This refers to an incident that took place over a year ago. So anyway, this will eventually, it'll end up in court, and Brad is thoroughly convinced that he will be exonerated. But that's not really the point. Yes, he'll be exonerated, but he is being harassed by a heartless system that's just plain stupid. And as he often points out, there were 16 murders, unsolved murders in Fort McMurray last year. Now, that's a lot of people in a town of, I think, about 100,000. That's a fair number of people. Most of them Somalis, and their murders are not solved. You might think that the police time might be better spent trying to solve that, rather than just making a trip around to Brad's place and slipping the cuffs on again. Okay, Brad, well, it's time to go and get that guy. You know, this is abuse of power, and I'm really hoping that there will come a time when Brad will be able to extract a big settlement in a lawsuit. Anyway, this is Paul Fromm. Time to take a short musical interlude. I'm going to play a song here by Rhonda Vincent, very attractive, very spirited singer, and this is called an old Connie Smith song, Once a Day.
When you found somebody new, I thought I never would forget you, for I thought then I never could. But time is taking on.
That's Rhonda Vincent, and this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on ResistanceRadio.com. I'm going to play another tune for
our musical interlude here. This is, A Place to Fall Apart, Merle Haggard and Janie Fricke.
I'll probably never see you eye to eye again. This letter's meant to be my last farewell. But you need to understand I'm nearly crazy. You need to know my life is gone to hell. Write me back and tell me why it ended. I need some final proof to show my heart. I'll be somewhere between I love you and what you're feeling now. Looking for a place to fall apart. I can't seem to justify your leaving me. I'm bewildered as to how it all came down. I thought everything was fine till your phone call. The call that turned my world around. They sent me word and tell me why it ended. I need some final proof to show my heart. I'll be somewhere between I love you and what you're feeling now. Looking for a place to fall apart. Looking for a place to fall apart. Looking for a place I can leave my heart. I need to be somewhere hiding when I feel the teardrops are. Looking for a place to fall apart. Janie Fricke sang it with me, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm going to be talking about Ernst Sundel again right after the break, and I'm going to play something for Ernst. This is from a great video done for him by his longtime friend and collaborator, another great man. I was at his birthday this past January in Vichy, France. This is Dr. Robert Faurisson. Music here is for Ernst.
Oh, still, oh, the night of the sunless night. Here, country and high, older I can't demand. Just out in the evening, the frothing of the demons and years. In drought, on the mountain, before the heat. Just out in the evening, the frothing of the demons and years. In drought, on the mountain, I'm the
That's a very emotional, sad farewell to Aaron Sundell, who died last Saturday in his home in the Black Forest in Bad Wildbad in Germany. And this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, as I say, more news and views for our people. What are we going to see here? We are going to look at a very, very thoughtful appreciation of Ernst Zundel by a tribute to Ernst Zundel by John Kaminsky, who's a writer from Florida. And if you'd like to see this, I'd be glad to send it to you. I'd send it by email. What this appreciation does is also reproduce some of the beautiful little works of art that Ernst Zundel crafted in prison. And when he was in prison in Canada from 2003 to 2005, in solitary confinement, sometimes denied necessary medical and dental care. I emphasize Canada. This wasn't North Korea, wasn't a Chinese jail. This was Canada. Ernst Zundel would send his supporters and donors little hand-drawn works of art. All he was allowed, wasn't allowed pens, of course, anything like that, but he was allowed children's colored pencils. And many of these are really quite beautiful. Some are one of his favorite motifs, bulrushes. Some are in English, German, and French. So some are more elaborate, like there's a beautiful eagle's head on one, an eagle crushing a snake on another. Two hands raised in a cry for liberty. Really beautiful. Anyway, this appreciation by John Kaminsky, Ernst Zundel and the Wicked Silence. He gave his life so everyone could be free. In an age of tyranny, truth is no longer an adequate defense. In fact, at the Zundel internet case in Toronto, we were told that truth was no defense. That's right. Truth is no defense. Well, there goes Anglo-Saxon law out the window. What you do when you are sworn in, you swear to, I think what? To tell the truth. The whole truth and nothing but the truth. But
it was decided by the tyrants in the Canadian minority-run judicial system that truth was no defense. You see, if you stated a fact that was true about a privileged minority, but that the truth had the effect of likely exposing them to hatred or contempt, it was no defense. So we would become a nation of liars, or politically correct trucklers. You know, you say what you know is nonsense, but you say it anyway. Anyway, John Kaminsky writes, I can't think of another person who had a larger impact on the way people think than Ernst Sundel. By standing up to the powers that be, and with a lot of help from his friends, he got the Supreme Court of Canada to eventually and begrudgingly validate the truth of what he was saying. He got Holocaust revisionism verified as a real subject with real questions about the historical record, and about the lies that continue to be told that utterly distort the truth of the world. Of course, the truth never matters when it is opposed, when it opposes the designs of the ever-present deep state, that notorious Jewish succubus which sucks the life out of all states and all people. So far from being able to celebrate his landmark legal victory with his friends, instead Ernst Sundel suffered years of imprisonment, at least 7 that we know of, and a permanent ban on public speaking that lasted right up until a few days ago when a heart attack took him away forever. And all this because they found him innocent. And some of the sketches he made. The charges were all spurious, never clearly defined. He was initially charged with a hate crime for publishing a book by Richard Harwood, a pseudonym entitled Did 6 Million Really Die? 2 trials drew revisionist experts from all over the world, and they demolished all the fictional Jewish claims. Somewhere along the line, someone blew up Ernst Sundel's house. Well, not exactly blew it up. It was an arson attempt that did about $300,000 damage. Since that time, officials at the Auschwitz site have been lowered their supposed death toll from 4 million to 1.4 million. But using Jewish mathematics, commentators on the Jewish TV networks continue to use the 6 million figure. Yes, not all of the supposed Jewish deaths were at Auschwitz. It was generally believed about 70% of them were. So 70% of the original 4 million claim of deaths at Auschwitz would give you about... about 2.8 million Jews, and when the figures at Auschwitz were reduced to by almost 75%, you would think that figure too would be reduced and therefore would come off the 6 million, but that's not the way it works. So after being illegally kidnapped in Tennessee, abused for 2 years in Canada, they never turned out the lights in his cell and made him write with a pencil stub, they shipped him to Germany for 5 more years in a prison system in which the truth is no defense because it's been declared irrelevant by the state. Since World War II, German courts have been totally polluted by perverted Jewish logic. So unjust are they today that Ernst Sundel's lawyer, Sylvia Stoltz, got 5 years for trying to defend him. This is the great silence, the wicked silence. Where the powers declare what can be known and what cannot. We are not allowed to know who our government murders surreptitiously, and we may not challenge the macabre Jewish death fantasies about World War II. Some 271,000 souls was the final camp death toll compiled by the Associated Press in 1946. That was the Red Cross figure, about, you know, give or take, about 275,000. Jews died of all causes in the detention camps. Some $28 billion in Holocaust reparations have been collected by Jewish judges as payment for suffering by survivors of the celebrated 6 million, which is a story the Jews have used to solicit sympathy for themselves since the late 1800s. Yes, long before National Socialist Germany, the figure of 6 million was being peddled around. Even the grandchildren of Holocaust relatives can collect payments for the trauma they've experienced listening to their parents bewail the sufferings they have endured, which, when you think about it, is the perfect Jewish occupation, making a lucrative career out of complaining about misery you caused yourself and blame on others. Because the Jews essentially control the media worldwide,
The Rothschilds even bought the Associated Press a few years back. Opposition to Jewish lies is seldom reported. The most important issues of our lifetime, 9/11 and the World Wars, were all precipitated by high-powered Jewish finagling, yet virtually no reporting on this can be found in any of the mainstream newspaper archives. What happened to Zundel and hundreds of his philosophical compatriots trying to rescue the unfairly besmirched reputation of Germany is now happening in America, in Oregon and Las Vegas, as people who believed they could depend on their constitution, after more than a year of abusive solitary confinement and only doublespeak from the courts, now believe otherwise. One innocent bystander has already cleverly plea bargained his way to a life sentence, and all the others involved in the Bundy standoff of 2014 or the Oregon standoff of 2016 have undergone something truly appropriate for our American gulag. Criminal abuse by private prison guards and preposterous restrictions by a power-mad judge. Observers of this kangaroo court insist the government objective is to never let these people out of jail at all. The legal situation in America now more resembles the Jewish Soviet totalitarian model of government than a constitutional republic, where no appeal against the lawless decisions of a criminal government is possible. Justice Ernst Zundel and his lawyer could not argue against his sentence without breaking more German laws. The corrupt judge in the Bundy trial permits no analysis of the government's behavior at all. The complete takeover of Western ranch lands by the Bureau of Land Management may not be mentioned. Remember the Black Lives Matter goons who were stealing and killing Cliven Bundy's cattle over a controversial decision by the government to nationalize ranch land on which the Bundy family cattle had grazed since the 1800s? This question has not been resolved in the courts, but merely pointing out the BLM, I'm sorry, this is not Black Lives Matter, Bureau of Land Management, arbitrary seizures of Western lands, the Bundys and many of their faithful supporters face life in prison from a court system definitely disinterested in the welfare of ordinary people who get in the way of government corruption. American courts are becoming more like Germany's every day, and everywhere in the free world, free speech is disappearing if you don't adhere to the principles of the Jewish bankers who now inarguably control every person's destiny. What stands out to me in both the Zundel cases of Zundel and the Bundys and their friends is the apathetic response of the public to anyone who is at least making the attempt to stand up for the rights of all of us. If they don't see it on TV or read it in the newspapers, it's not real to them. But worse than that, if they do see it on TV or read it in the newspapers, they regard it as real. And this has given rise to practically every falsehood we believe in this life. As the best-known publicist for the truth of World War II, Zundel spent the last decade of his life unable to publicly address the issues most important to him. In his absence, however, the revisionist message has sprung up like mushrooms all across the internet, and even in Jewish-controlled Facebook. The government that now controls us now demands our complete silence about the crimes it has committed and the lies it has told. I think quite a powerful tribute by John Kaminsky. And he goes on to say, ultimately Ernst Zundel gave his life for our freedom. He refused to be cowed by Jewish lies and returned the abuse he got from his captors with stoic dignity that inspired his many followers. He paid a very high price for telling the truth. No doubt authorities are pleased by the treatment Zundel received and hope others will be dissuaded from emulating his behavior. Unfortunately for them, the opposite has happened. Inspired by Zundel's advice, the Corps of Truth Tellers has expanded greatly and largely perfected its analysis of World War II, which proves there were no gas chambers, that Hitler only wanted peace, and that Roosevelt strong-armed all the countries of Europe in wiping out Germany once and forever, a goal which today appears to have been achieved. In fact, the real heart of darkness in World War II belonged to the Allies, to the torture of Dresden, the phony trials at Nuremberg, and the premeditated starvation of Germans after the war. This is how the Jews rewarded the Germans for their hospitality. We Americans are feeling it now. We all failed, Ernst Sindel, by not protesting with sufficient loudness his unjust treatment by corrupt authorities who are enriched by putting Jewish interests above the rest of humanity. This includes almost the entire U.S. Congress. And we are failing now as men who stood up for the Constitution, remain incarcerated under duress by corrupt politicians, held without bail for only protesting federal encroachment on private lands when no bail is by law reserved only for murderers and traitors. For the government to call these ranchers terrorists is truly the pot calling the kettle black. All of us who believe that what Ernst Sindel said and did is the real way an honest human being should act. Today, this personality type is being systematically exterminated on all levels by a vicious campaign to replace us with a population totally unable to think critically and willing to go along with the crime if the salary is adequate. However we slice it, as long as we fail to object to the abuse of others, we're assaulted for trying to help the common good. We consign ourselves to a future governed by the wicked silence of people who are afraid to speak the truth and who've been intimidated for fear of earning the wrath of the people who rule them. I think Kaminsky has made some very powerful and some very good points. Well, this is Paul Frommann. You're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I'll be back with you again tomorrow, same time. Midnight Eastern Time, and the show, of course, is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of these are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf, forever, played by the 48th Highlanders of Canada, and which will start in just a moment. We're having our little problems here. I'll be playing this short musical interlude in just a second here. Don't hesitate to write to me if you have concerns you'd like to raise. Or issues you'd like me to cover. I can't promise I will, but I certainly will try. And my email is paul@paulfromm.com. That's paul@paulfromm.com. The anthem of the real Canada. Well, we're trying to play it here. We do have our troubles some nights, don't we?